Good morning, I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of FM 94.9 and San Diego and all of Southern California, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. If you enjoy the outdoors or natural science aspects of San Diego and Southern California, and perhaps like me, you're something of a bookworm, chances are you have a few publications on the shelf published by San Diego-based Sunbelt Publications. Sunbelt has roots in the publication business going back to 1973, producing and distributing books about adventures in the natural history and cultural heritage of the Californias. And these include Sunbelt's own homegrown publications by area authors and exclusive distribution of select, like-minded publishers, as well as a sampling of related wholesale products. And as Sunbelt looks towards new opportunities in electronic publishing and distribution, it continues to roll out new books and new publications, including Anza Borrego, A Photographic Journey, and the recent Fossil Treasures of Anza Borrego, which features three chapters written by Anza Borrego paleontology and geology expert Paul Romica, who is not only the author of another landmark Sunbelt publication about Anza Borrego called Edge of Creation, but Paul was also a recent guest on the show. And joining us today on Tree Huggers International is the CEO and publisher of Sunbelt Publications. The honorary title would be the executive naturalist at Sunbelt, Lowell Lindsay. Lowell, welcome to Tree Huggers International. It's very nice to have you here today. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. It's a delight to be here.
I find it interesting and appropriate that Sunbelt's mission statement specifically refers to the Californias in plural, as in Baja California and also the Golden State.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about your decision to refer to California as a plural?
Very, very intentional, because we, being natural history people, are more interested in the land itself, the wildlife, the people that have been in this land for many long years before there were boundaries. We see this area as an overall bioregion that, for our time, historic time, is indeed two states of two national entities. But from a natural perspective, it's all one area. So it's the Californias to us, Baja and Alta.
And I noticed that Sunbelt has actually some very new publications about Baja, which I want to talk about in a few minutes. But you were in Texas when you first came up with the concept for Sunbelt Publications, or at least that's where you were when you and your wife came up with the logo for the company, correct?
Yes. For almost all of our life, we've really had one foot in Texas with family roots there and later on job obligations, as well as the other foot in California, which is where both of us were raised. So we spent much of our life commuting back and forth, as it were, through the Southwest between Texas and California.
Can you talk a little bit about how the whole concept for Sunbelt came about and how the logo was designed?
In the early 70s, Diana was doing her master's degree at San Diego State here, and she specialized in the Anza Borrego region, the history and the natural history of the Southern California deserts. And her master's thesis was picked up by Copley Press as part of their very well-received series on where did San Diego come from and where is it today? So the Anza Borrego region story was a major part of that. Well, one thing led to another. In 1978, we wrote and had published by Wilderness Press the guidebook to the Anza Borrego Desert. It's now in its fifth edition, and who knows, hundreds of thousands of copies and hopefully tens of thousands of happy glove boxes of Jeeps and tens more thousands of backpackers out there in the desert. So the books became a very natural part of our love of the outdoors, and one thing led to another. So in early 80s, we decided to expand beyond just being authors and to actually open a publishing house based on the kind of work we were doing and bring more authors and partners into our whole concept here. And the Sunbelt idea, indeed, we were at a beer garden in the shadow of the Texas State Capitol on the north side, a longtime historical place in and of itself. and just start doodling on the classic back of a napkin or front of a napkin. I guess it's the back of an envelope. Anyhow, it was definitely a napkin. And the notion of traveling through the Southwest, in the certainly the orientation of the Southwest to Native Americans, led to the logo as it emerged there from that napkin, based on the Zia sun symbol from New Mexico, and then the squash blossom motif from the Navajo, largest reservation in the United States, in Arizona. We kind of melded that into an SB for Sunbelt. And the rays of the sun that you see coming out kind of had a sense of the early Spanish explorers, the Padres, spreading the spirit of Spain and the discovery of the New World. That's where it all started. It all started, and that was on the end of a bicycle ride from California to Texas.
Well, then you definitely deserved a beer after that.
Yeah, right. We deserved a beer or two.
It's really become this regional publishing house, and it's really been affected by your and your wife's love and life in the Southwest.
It's our story writ large, as it were.
Well, I want to talk about the fascination you and your wife share for Anza Borrego and how that manifests itself in the publications you're involved with. And I want to talk about Anza Borrego, A Photographic Journey. Now, this book recently came out. What's new about this book for Sunbelt?
Ernie Callen is the author and photographer for that Anza Borrego Photographic Journey. He's a former mayor of Escondido and, like us, has been a near lifelong passionate advocate of the desert and the messages, as it were, from the desert, the beauty of the land. And part of the motivation for that book was to really get the word out that we've got the real jewel of California state parks out there, as well as the largest state park in the nation, as well as one of the largest and one of the most varied desert parks in the nation. Beautiful place, particularly when you get into its nooks and crannies and canyons and out in the Badlands. And the idea of getting there, like I said, part of the motivation there was to get the word out about what we have, the valuable land that we are blessed with here, just a few miles to the east, and the PowerLink project as a threat to the wilderness and the values, the historic value, the cultural value, the scientific value of that land. So the book and the campaign to protect and preserve the park, two sides of the same story.
Do you feel there is an underappreciation for what we have essentially in our backyard in San Diego County? And do you think that makes it easier for projects like the Sunrise Power Link to basically go by without as much protest as opposed to if they wanted to put a power line through Yosemite?
Yes. Deserts in general are not as easily loved, if you would, or appreciated, if you would, as the forested or mountainous parks of our land, of our world, Yosemite, Yellowstone, Kings Canyon, so on and so forth. The desert is the kind of land that you have got to get out of your car. You've got to get out on the land. You've got to listen to that which can't be heard, the silence. You've got to get into those canyons. You've got to hear the trickle, just the trickle of a small stream or a spring, whereas in our big mountain national parks, you don't so much hear a trickle of a stream. You hear the roar of a waterfall, which is magnificent, but there's a lot of it there. And when you just have a very little bit of something, it's, in a way, its value, its sensory impression is magnified just for what little there is of it. The point is, in order to fall in love with the desert, you must get out and spend time there on the ground in the nighttime and with the incredible canopy of the heavens above. It may get you, and it may get you for a lifetime, and it certainly has for us desert lovers.
And obviously it's best to experience the desert, maybe not necessarily going 30 miles per hour through a wash someplace. I seem to feel it's better off to be explored on foot, at least during reasonable times of the day this time of year.
Sure. This time of year, of course, would be the least visited time out in the desert, obviously, when you've got temperatures pushing 100 degrees Fahrenheit. But even so, the early morning and the late afternoon and certainly the nighttime hours are very much a fine experience in and of itself. There's a natural history term, a biologic term called crepuscular lifestyle that many, many creatures in the arid areas demonstrate. And that has to do with not being fully nocturnal, not being fully diurnal, but rather being early risers, enjoying the sunrise hours, and then going into torpor or siesta, if you would, during the day. And again, getting up towards the evening hours and enjoying the twilight times, the crack between two worlds, as it were.
You know, Paul Romeka was on the show a few weeks ago talking about not only Edge of Creation, but also his contributions to fossil treasures of Anza Borrego. The fossil beds he describes sound like some of the most diverse on the planet, as well as in one of the most seemingly unlikely places. That is until you really understand the mechanics of the geology and how everything works there. And that makes it a fascinating museum as well.
You betcha. It's a unique collection, a unique library, if you would, of the last 7 million years in our southwest desert region. The strata is almost unbroken. In other words, there are few pages or few chapters, so to speak, missing out of that history book of the last 7 million years. It has a lot to do with the very, very active and unique geology of our region. One of the major features of that geology is the fact that as the peninsular California, this Baja Southern Alta California, continues to rotate away from the Mexican mainland and opening up the Gulf of California, we have this huge, huge trough in the crust of the earth. And with the Delta Dam from the Colorado River sealing off the northern part of that trough, we've ended up with the Salton Trough, the Salton Sea. And that is the largest hole in the ground, if you would, in the Western Hemisphere. And when you've got a large hole in the ground, like as big as that is, surrounded by almost 2-mile-high mountains over 7 million years, you've got a lot of stuff washing down and collecting in that basin. And as time goes by bit, those pages, those chapters of the Book of Ages are written. And as erosion occurs, we are able to go in there, geologists, paleontologists, archaeologists, and start dissecting or teasing out the story of the animals, the story of the landscapes, the environments that they lived in, and the story of climate change, warming, cooling, freezing, moist, dry, which is a key element to probably one of the hottest natural history stories of today, global warming.
And what a great metaphor about it being a large hole in the ground and the sediments that wind up in there from not only the Colorado River, I mean from Sinaloa in Mexico. And you have to, boggles the mind how these sediments wind up in there. But of course, if you're that far below sea level, something's going to wind up showing up in there. If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. I'm Tommy Howe, and joining us today is Lowell Lindsay, CEO and publisher of San Diego-based Sunbelt Publications. You guys are actually in El Cajon, correct?
Yes.
How do you go over manuscripts and determine what you want to publish? I mean, do authors mail you unsolicited pieces?
We generally are contacted by authors or groups as to an idea they have. Sometimes we will actually go out and commission a work and go out and find the authors. The Fossil Treasures Project was one such, where we formulated the idea, and then working with George Jefferson, the state paleontologist. George has an incredible network of contacts in the science community. We went out and recruited the scientists and the specialists to write that book. The more normal way is people come to us with ideas. The key there is for them to know already the market that they are intending to write into. I mean, after all is said and done, we are a business, and the books have to have a sufficient potential readership out there.
So how can you tell if something, at the risk of you giving up secrets, how can you tell if something is going to be profitable or have longevity? I mean, for example, the book that you and your wife wrote, the Anza Borrego Desert Region, that hikes book, I mean, obviously it's in its fifth edition. It's been around for a long time. It's had longevity. It's got some legs, I guess, as folks might say, at least in the record business. Is there any way you can sort of maybe see a treatment for a book and go, this, I think, could be something that could stand on the shelf for a while?
Well, if we're looking for a guarantee in our acquisition selection, I would just have to suggest, like life, there's no guaranteed answers. Sometimes you miss and sometimes you hit. Probably most of the time it's somewhere in the middle of that bell curve in terms of judgment. One of my particular techniques when a proposal comes in, one of the first questions I will ask is, tell me about a dozen books that are in print today out on the shelves that are like your title. And almost invariably, the author will say, well, there are no books like mine. This is unique. This is special. And my response is, that's the end of the conversation. Go down to one of the big box bookstores, Borders, Barnes & Noble, what have you, and find a dozen books that are like your title, and then come back and tell me what they are.
And the idea being is if there's other books about the same subject, then it's already reasonably proven
right
to have some interest?
There's a track record. There's a track record. If there are no books like it, I still want to hear about those dozen books. I want to hear about the dozen closest books. And even if this is the one and only book on its subject, there is going to be some body of material that's out there. Once we've identified the body of material that is either very closely related, perhaps 100% overlapping, or just vaguely related, now we can go out and we can look at those titles and get a feel for whether this truly is fitting a unique niche in the market. Perhaps it's already there in the market. It's an overwritten market, and sorry, it's a beautiful book, but it's been worked over too much. Or on the other hand, it's a beautiful book. In our opinion, there are a few members of your family and your friends will probably buy the book, but it's just not something that the market is going to be able to support.
Do you have someone who goes over potential material other than yourself?
Oh, certainly. It's our most publishing houses have an acquisitions editor, an acquisitions committee, some acquisitions process of some sort. It's essential that there be a process out there that primarily is focusing on the potential performance of the book out there in the market. Although certainly, and there's a whole set of, there's another line of publications that we do, we call it partner publications, co-publications, where the market as a whole may not be able to support the book, but there are donor organizations, there are grants, both public, private, foundation, what have you, that can see the value in that book and are willing to sponsor it and bring it to market or to sponsor it in order to keep the cost of the book down and make it affordable to get out there to the people that, in their opinion, it needs to be.
Well, let's talk about some of the new titles at Sunbelt. And we were talking about the two Californias a few minutes ago. And one of the new books that Sunbelt has released is Oasis of Stone, Visions of Baja California Sur. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oasis of Stone is a beautiful pictorial book that speaks to the geology, the biology, the plants and animals, as well as early human history of the Baja Peninsula. Bruce Berger is the author of the book, a very well-known natural history writer in the Southwest. And in a combination of the magnificent photographs by Miguel Angel, as well as Bruce's very, very insightful and lyrical writing, we have hoped and have been successful, we think, in introducing people in some cases, or for Baja aficionados, to remind them again what it is that they are so passionate about, this own very unique land out there.
And does that theme carry over into the Baja Mexico Through the Eyes of an Honest Lens publication as well?
Certainly. That focuses more on the cultural heritage of Mexico and Baja, as well as Mexico today. But again, that's an example of a beautiful work that is telling the story in its own way through the camera's lens and in the written word about that, in a way, magic land of Baja California as a whole.
Do you find there are parts of Baja California that just have a more wild character to them than, say, parts of Southern California, like Laguna Salada or some of the desert areas that just feel like they're just that much closer to the way they were 1,000 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. The farther south you go in Baja, the wilder and more lonely in a very positive sense, it gets, particularly down in the central part of the peninsula, in the San Francisco Mountains, where the remnants of an early civilization, one of the earliest civilizations in North America, are found in terms of the cave paintings, the giant cave paintings of central Baja California. But in order to get in there, number one, it's probably a two-day drive down there on the narrow ribbon of the asphalt of the paved highway. And then you're looking at another day or so in a Jeep to get up into the mountains, to the launching area, into the canyons and the mountains. And then you're looking at a day or two on muleback to get down into that. So right away, you're in a variety of means of transportation. You're upwards of 4 to 5 days before you even get to your destination there. And when you're down in those canyons of San Francisco and the surrounding mountain ranges, you know you are almost on another planet. You know at least you have been transported back to a time that the land looks exactly like the first Spanish explorers and the Padres saw as they made their way into that rugged peninsula.
And Baja has such surprisingly high mountain peaks. I mean, San Pedro de Martir, it's 9,000 feet?
No, it's upwards of 11,000.
Unbelievable Jeffrey Pine forests up there. And this, you don't even think of this being part of Baja, and the peninsula is so narrow.
Right.
And how remarkable is it that the elevation shoots up that high, right in the middle of it? I mean, I think that's what makes the peninsula such a wild, special place.
Yep, it is that.
There's a couple of new publications from Sunbelt about the Kumeyaay Indians, Strangers in a Stolen Land, and also Just Before Sunset.
Richard Carrico, professor of anthropology at San Diego State, is the author of Strangers in a Stolen Land. The first edition talked about the time from contact in the mid-1800s up until pretty much the close of the frontier, late 1800s. The second edition, which we have just coming out this week, expands that time frame to the beginning of human history in the San Diego region, as well as bringing it up into the early 30s, when the present distribution in the reservation system as we know it today was pretty much solidified. So it's an expanded version of the earlier work on the Indians of San Diego. Strangers in a Stolen Land, it's simply the title at least is a very local specific version of a story that has been told a dozen thousand times in the history of the United States. It's a land that once belonged to the Native Americans, the First People, as they're called in Canada, the First Nation, as they're called in Canada. The trade-off of the American frontier versus the local people. And our story is, how did that show up in San Diego? We think it will be well-received, perhaps controversial in parts, and that's perfectly okay.
What's next for Sunbelt? What are some future projects you're looking at?
Well, we had a proposal come in on Palm Springs gardening. And when that proposal first came in, I thought to myself, okay, fine, I'm going to put it through the ringer. And it just didn't get my attention a whole lot, because Palm Springs was, oh, wait a minute, am I really into Palm Springs stuff? But I came quickly to realize the gist of it was not so much gardening in a upscale RICO Southern California desert city, but rather, what does it look like to live in an arid environment and an ever more arid environment as the drought intensifies and as global warming certainly continues to grip our lands? What's it look like to live in that land, to either have to live in that land and want to live in that land and still have beautiful surroundings in terms of your landscaping and your gardens? The author of this book has that vision. She's a radio and TV personality in her own right in the Coachella Valley area. Her concept of arid area landscaping gardening really got our attention, and we felt that was a large, I mean, that was another contribution into the mission, if you would, of Sunbelt Publications.
What are some favorite places of yours to go for quiet and solitude, not even in Southern California or Baja, just around the Southwest? In addition to, but not limited to.
Palladura Canyon in northwest Texas, up in the Texas Panhandle, where we lived for quite some years, is a very, very special, unique place. It's called the Grand Canyon of Texas. It's also the largest state park in Texas. It's a canyon that is right out in the very flat, seemingly endless high plains of West Texas, but given some unique geology and hydrology of the area, this canyon has evolved through the last several million years, and now it is a spectacular place. And given that it's out there on the Texas high plains, which is still a pretty darn lonely, remote area, lightly populated, we thoroughly enjoyed being able to learn to love that land. Geologically, it is, if you put Palladura Canyon on top of the Grand Canyon, Bryce Canyon package, you would have a complete layer cake of somewhere around, pushing a billion years. One of my places, Canyon de Chelly on the Navajo Reservation in northeast Arizona, certainly another one of these lesser known but very, very magnificent places to visit.
How would you compare Anza Borrego to, say, Guadalupe Mountains National Park or Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument? You feel Anza Borrego is potentially worthy of National Park Service designation?
Certainly. It originally was intended to be a national park, one of the nation's first national parks, and this all was about 75 years ago as the concept was developing. However, what was also developing at the same time was the Great Depression. So when that came along, so many good plans were shelved to deal with that human crisis. And as it developed, then the state of California became the heir, if you would, to the concept. And we feel that, we and many feel that it is absolutely a national class, world class park that's right up there with the other national parks that specialize in desert lands. Grand Canyon, Big Bend, Oregon Pipe, Guadalupe Mountains, Death Valley, Joshua Tree, Eastern Mojave. How does it compare to the Guadalupes? Its sheer size is part of that. Over 1,000 square miles, of which, Anza Borrego we're talking here now, over 1,000 square miles in the park, of which about 2/3 of that is designated wilderness, which by definition, the Landmark Conservation Act of 1971, by definition, is a place where humans can enter into but not remain. In other words, wilderness is exactly that, intended to be that refuge and that kind of retreat that we can get back in touch with our roots. In a way, Anza Borrego, in as much as it has that incredibly huge chunk of protected wilderness within its boundaries, is much a greater protection of the cultural and the biologic value of wilderness than some of the national parks and monuments. And it's not to say that they aren't absolute treasures, and each in their own right, each very different in its own right. Well, I've certainly enjoyed talking about the land that we love, the creatures that we love, the history and the geology, and as well as our particular role in it, which is through publications to bring the understanding and the excitement and the profound knowledge, mystery, if you would, of the land and its creatures. We've been at this for about a quarter of a century now and look forward to doing similar work well into the future.
It's great having a regional publisher with just such great titles that relate to not only Southern California, Baja, but also the Southwest. really appreciate you coming on the show today, Lowell. It's been very, very nice having you here.
Okay, Tommy. Well, thank you very much. This has been a great experience.
And sunbeltpub.com is the website for Sunbelt Publications.
Yes.
That's www.sunbeltpub.com.
Right, right. And one other website, which if you go to that, you will certainly get directed over there, our catalog and shopping cart, electronic shopping cart, is sunbeltbooks.com.
Sunbeltbooks.com.
Right, sunbeltbooks.com or sunbeltpub.com. They'll both get you there.
Lowell Lindsay, publisher, CEO of El Cajon, based Sunbelt Publications. Thanks again for coming in, and we will talk to you next time. Be well.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT, FM 94.9. Many thanks again to Lowell Lindsay, the CEO and publisher of Sunbelt Publications, for coming by and joining us to talk about Anza Borrego and Baja and current goings-on with Sunbelt. The Sunbelt Publications warehouse and bookstore is located at 1256 Fayette Street in El Cajon. That's 1256 1256 Fayette Street in El Cajon at Cuyamaca and Fletcher Parkway. While you're there, make sure you ask about the warehouse discount on publications. The bookstore is open Monday through Friday from 8 to 5, and it can be opened by appointment as well, evenings and weekends. Just call ahead, 619-258-4911. That's area code 619-258-4911. There's more information about Sunbelt Publications at their websites, www.sunbeltpub.com. That's sunbeltpub.com. And to go to their online bookstore, you can go to www.sunbeltbooks.com. That's www.sunbeltbooks.com. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media. And as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, go ahead and email me, tommy@fm949sd.com. For more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, you can go to the Tree Huggers International page at the FM 94.9 website. That's www.fm949sd.com/treehuggers. Or just go to the FM 94.9 homepage and click on the Tree Huggers International logo. Again, this is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 5:30 with another take on natural science and environmental affairs in our corner of Southern California. But in the meantime, get ready for another edition of Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation. It's on the way next on FM 94.9. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.